This is the fourth episode in this podcast series on applied cultural evolution. My name is Joe Brewer, and I am your host, and I'm also the director of the Center for Applied Cultural Evolution. The topic that I want to discuss with you today is how evolutionary science can bring much needed synthesis across all of the different social sciences, as well as fields that are not normally thought of as science, yet deal with human history and human societies. Let me begin by saying that the world we are living in now is a world riddled with disruptions and change. We are living through a time that is unprecedented in human history. And in this time, we are watching as the consequences of human actions have rippling consequences across literally every landscape on Earth. In a time like this, where there are so many threats and vulnerabilities that are related to the way that our societies have developed throughout time, how they've changed to become the way that they are now, and the ways that they are likely to change in the future, there's a serious and urgent need for bringing together all of the best that we know about human societies. Yet there's a conundrum here. For if you walk into a university campus, or if you go to the website of any major university on Earth and look at their program offerings, you'll notice that there are fields like psychology, business, economics, finance, history, sociology, political science. What you won't see is a coherent school of social sciences, or a school of society. So what is it about the social sciences that has kept them so fragmented and broken apart that even today, in the early part of the 21st century, we mostly lack a coherent and well-synthesized way of studying societies? That's an interesting question, and we'll touch on some of the answers as we continue in this episode. But the important thing for now is that when we look at societies in the world, we might reflect on a parallel observation, which is what happens when we look at the Earth from space. When you go up into outer space and look back down on the Earth, one of the most striking features is its holism. You don't see visible markers of the boundaries between different political entities. The countries of Western Europe do not appear visibly from outer space. So we have this way of constructing our social worlds with boundaries that are not reflected in the seamless integration of the whole system that is the planet Earth. Yet when we look at societies, we don't have the same perceptual systems to enable us to see the whole thing as an integrated gestalt. There is no equivalent of swirling cloud patterns for weather systems, overlapping with green, brown, orange, yellow, and other tapestries of color indicating the relationships of different kinds of landscapes, as we see when we visually look down upon the Earth, and the photons coming back through the atmosphere and reaching our eyes give us the ability to perceive and make sense of the immense beauty and complexity that is the dynamic Earth. No similar systems of perception exist for seeing human societies. What we have instead are diverse streams of data that come from different ways of asking questions about specific elements of societies. So we might do things like every 10 years send out a survey for the Census Bureau asking questions about family income, about educational attainment, and other kinds of social data that help us create a picture that changes with time. Or we might go into our small community and conduct a poll asking people who pass by a specific street corner questions about their mobility and how they get across town, such as whether they ride a bike or if they ever take the local bus. So we have various ways that we gather data about societies, but always it's done in some kind of fragmented and particulate manner. And very rarely do we see attempts to put those different fragments together and build the puzzle to see the whole image that would emerge. To take that puzzle metaphor further, the only reason that we're able to reconstruct an image with a puzzle is because there is the same substrate, the same physical material on which the original photograph was imprinted, that was then cut into small pieces and separated. To put a puzzle together requires that there was previously an integrated whole that was the photo for the puzzle used in the reconstruction. This is an indication of why the social sciences are not able to produce such a holistic gestalt image now. We simply lack the material substrates for integration and synthesis to see and perceive the whole that can be built up from the different parts. The reason for this is not simple to explain. But one part of it that's extremely important is that major advances were made in the sciences throughout the last 500 years by engaging in what has become known as reductionism, which simply means that we take something very complex and we break it down into its functional parts, and we try the best that we can to learn how those functional parts work. And then after we've done this reduction of complexity, we make an effort to put the pieces back together again. This has worked brilliantly with great success in almost every domain of knowledge that exists in the world today. But one of the stumbling blocks has been that in order to create a functionally distinct, reduced piece, we need to have a paradigm. We need to have a way of organizing our thinking about how the world works to help guide us in the questions that we ask, the data that we gather, the experiments that we run. And in the social sciences, there's been a very pernicious kind of dualism, which separates mind from body, separates culture from nature, separates emotion from mind, and so on, or emotion from reason, and so on. And so there's a need for paradigms. And I say this in plural, we need multiple paradigms, each of which is capable of bringing integration and synthesis. In my own work, I've identified three paradigmatic approaches that are essential for combining all of the social sciences. One of them is evolution, as understood in Darwinian terms. So I'll come back to that in a moment, since that's the main topic of this podcast series. I want to just name the other two briefly. The other two approaches are embodiment philosophy and complexity science. I won't go into much detail now, except to say that embodiment philosophy is not based on the dualism that separates mind from body, but rather sees the body as something that interacts with its environment, and the mind emerges dynamically through those interactions and is never separate in the first place. This relates very much to complexity science, because complexity science is about understanding the general dynamic properties of different kinds of systems, regardless of their particular expression in the world, where the dynamic patterns help us understand and manage the complexity of every specific real-world phenomenon that we care to study, whether it's weather systems or the spread of gossip or any other very complex real-world phenomenon. There are dynamic patterns in play, and complexity science helps us to deal with them. But it's evolutionary studies that I think is of fundamental importance for this discussion. I want to share a somewhat surprising statement, which is that human beings are animals, And so therefore, human behavior is animal behavior. Yet when we look at the social sciences, we see that we separate human behavior and human social behavior more broadly, as if it's somehow distinct from animal behavior. So we don't treat all of the social sciences as a subset of animal behavior research in biology. Yet, it's a fundamental fact that's inescapably true if we take the real world seriously, that there is no such thing as the study of human behavior separate from our biology, just like there's no such thing as the study of mouse behavior or ant behavior or butterfly behavior without considering its biology. But we have a long history in the social sciences of treating the theories for human and societal dynamics as if they're fundamentally different from the rest of the animal world. This is another way that dualism creeps into the theories of the social sciences. So I say this because the need to create a substrate that can bring synthesis and integration across all of the social sciences requires that we take evolution seriously, because evolution has been the organizing paradigmatic approach for all living things on Earth, humans included. Now, there has been, in the last maybe 30 or 40 years, an explosion of evolutionary research into things like human psychology and decision making, the development of the mind or the acquisition of language by children, the capacities for creative expression and how people learn from each other to improve their skills, the development of different kinds of technologies and how they relate functionally to diverse landscapes and environments. And on and on, there are ways that evolutionary thinking has been applied as a broad integrating perspective and approach to every different domain explored in the social sciences. Similarly, fields like history that are not often thought of as sciences, or archaeology, which is something like a bridge between history and anthropology. Both of these are areas where there is great capacity for methodological rigor in the ways that we gather data and make interpretations. Also, in both cases, for archaeology and history, they are vast repositories of data on which to compare our theoretical studies and present-day experiments to try to validate or disprove them using historical analysis. There's also a common phenomenon, or a common distinction, I should say, within the biological sciences between what's called genotype and phenotype, where genotype is the collection of all of the genes within the DNA of a specific organism as embodied by its chromosome, or its collection of chromosomes, whereas the phenotype is the different but related collection of traits and properties for the physical body and the behavioral repertoire of the same organism. So there are some genes that are associated with aggressive behavior, for example, but it is the aggressive behavior that is expressed as phenotype while being built upon in interacting ways with genotype. And there's a long history of clarifying the differences between the genetic components and the developmentally expressed components between genes and phenomes. This kind of rigorous clarification and distinction has been much more difficult to achieve in cultural domains, where we have to ask questions like, is there an equivalent of DNA within culture? And if so, what form does it take? What is its basic structure? What is the cultural equivalent of the double helix, so famous in DNA studies? And it may be the case that there is no such analogous structure, and we need to think differently about culture than we do about genetics. But the important thing here is that we have a massive set of challenges in the real world. Things like global warming, systemic corruption, the spread of lies and misinformation on social media, mass poverty and many kinds of structural inequality, undermining our abilities to collaborate and trust each other and work together to solve really important and urgent problems. We have many different areas where we need to bring the best knowledge available that we have to tackling them, to give us the best chances of dealing with them successfully. And yet, we lack integration across this knowledge. So the perspective of evolution, as it has been so powerful at unifying and bringing synthesis to the biological sciences, is poised to do exactly the same thing for the social sciences and the humanities. I'd like to offer a little thought experiment. Imagine that it's the year 2200, so 180 years into the future. Now, the world will be dramatically different then. As we know now, the world is changing very quickly and in fundamental ways. So how deeply might we envision changes in the structure of university programs? Well, first off, we'd need to ask if it's even possible or likely that universities will exist at that time in the future. And right now, that is an open question, because we're dealing with a massive exponential explosion in human population that has been ongoing for the last 150 years and really kicked into overdrive in the mid-20th century by the Green Revolution. And concurrent with this massive explosion of population has been increasing strain and deterioration of ecosystems all across the planet, telling us that we're moving into a destabilization or dynamic of collapse that may bring an end to civilizations. And there may not be societies of the same kind of complexity in 180 years as there are in the world today. Let's leave aside the likelihood of civilizations existing or universities existing at that point in time. We might pick that up in a future podcast. For now, I want to ask the question, how would information have been organized at universities during the times of change that we're now living through? That we see them in different light at this time in the future. So this is asking a perspective question about future-oriented evolution. How is the university going to evolve? And I want to make the assumption that we have preserved the core findings of our major bodies of knowledge throughout the next 200 years. Well, one thing that I think would be evident is that in this period of nearly 200 years, we will have brought integration and synthesis to all of the social sciences. Imagine what this might look like. I had a conversation recently with a friend who is interested in these topics, and we discussed a way of reorganizing universities that might offer a hint of things to come, even if they don't take the specific form that we outlined in that conversation. What we talked about was how interesting it would be if there was a school of emergence at a university, and a school of emergence being set up to study how dynamic patterns emerge within any kind of complex system, whether it's a physical system, more specifically a biological system, or more specifically still, a human social system. Well, one of the things that students might learn, or that might be areas of focused research, would be things like, how do recursive or iterative, self-reflective or self-referencing dynamic processes unfold across physical, biological, and social systems? This is the kind of question that would be asked if the outcome of a specific process becomes the input for the same process in the future. And this is a very broadly general set of phenomena. So it would be something that could be studied by social scientists and physical scientists and humanities experts all at the same time in collaboration with each other. Similarly, a school of emergence might have a field of applied cultural evolution embedded within it, where the patterns of emergence within social systems, where there are complex and multifaceted feedbacks between social and ecological dynamics, together allow for the emergence of particular kinds of developmental patterns, or make it very difficult or impossible for other kinds of developmental patterns to form. So take, for example, the idea of regional scale innovation. There are currently economic policy platforms in different cities where they try to develop relationships between industrial sectors or sectors of society to make their region more economically productive and viable and resilient against shocks. This kind of work is of extreme importance in today's world, where there's tremendous competition from one region to another to attract talent to the organizations within them. And so the idea of a regional economic cluster for innovation is a very enticing one. So the question might be, what are the patterns of emergence for regional scale innovation to arise and be sustained? Similarly, what are the emergent patterns that keep innovation from arising at the scale of a regional economy? A question like this, when framed in this way, helps us to see that there might be system-level patterns that can be compared culturally and ecologically from one place to another, but only if we are looking at the patterns of emergence as the set of phenomena that allow us to see and compare between the different expressions from one place to another. So I think of this as the cultural evolution of universities to get through the process of planetary collapse that we are now in may require that we shift the frames that help us organize the deep ecological structure of our knowledge, and that an evolutionary perspective is fundamental to this. I started this podcast episode by suggesting that the social sciences are currently fragmented, but they need to be put together. And I've just ended this discussion with an example of regional innovation clusters, where we might look at one set of phenomena, like the dynamic patterns of emergence and self-organization, that can be compared from one region to another, as a way of helping us see the power of an integrative approach. What I want to end with is a specific insight from cultural evolutionary studies that I think is vital to the effort that anyone may undertake to achieve this synthesis across the social sciences. The one major insight that I'll share right now is that human culture evolves using social learning to a much greater extent than any other animal that we have studied. Let me say this a little differently. One of the secrets of our success as human beings is our ability to learn from each other. Specifically, we engage in teaching and being students of teachers with much more depth and sophistication than any other animal that has ever been studied. How can we use our ability to be teachers and to be students, specifically to accelerate the synthesis of knowledge across the social sciences and humanities? What can we do to establish relationships of collective learning by being better teachers and by being better students? I hope that this podcast series is helpful in some small way in making these questions more viable and generative in whatever work you happen to do. For I see applied cultural evolution as essential both to the problems of the world and to cultivating the integration of knowledge to be able to tackle problems of the world. And all of this, when it comes down to it, involves a great deal of teaching and learning. So with that, I thank you for your time. and I hope that this is helpful for you.